Welcome to Volante Elevate, where we explore what the world of payments will look like tomorrow by talking to the experts who are building it today. Your host for each episode, Volante's Chief Marketing Officer, Vinay Prabhakar. Ready to take your payments IQ to new heights? Let's get started.
Thanks, everybody, for joining this episode of Volante Elevate. We're going to dive deep today into PayMod 3.0, exploring how financial institutions are reloading their strategies for the next wave of payments modernization. Now, normally in Volante Elevate, these are one-to-one conversations, but we've got two. We're joined today by Alan Ng, Managing Director of Payments, and Bhaskar Banerjee, Principal Director of Payments, both of Accenture. Accenture and Volante are working together to move forward PayMod 3.0. And we'll be talking today to learn more about the history of PayMod 1.0 and 2.0 as well. But most importantly, how can 3.0 help financial businesses ride the crest of this next wave? So welcome to Volante Elevate, guys.
Thanks, Vinay, for, you know, for the warm introductions and having us, you know, on the podcast today. So maybe I'll just do a quick introduction of myself and hand over to Bhaskar.
Sure.
So I run Accenture Payment Technology Consulting in North America and have the opportunity working with different sizes bank, you know, ranging from the tier one global bank to some of the tier two, tier three down market institutions, and have been a partner with with Volante for quite some time. Haven't seen the evolutions of Volante right in the past couple of years and expanding market share. Absolutely happy to share our perspective on PayMod 3.0 today. Bhaskar?
Yeah, thank you, Vinay, and thanks, Alan. My name is Bhaskar Banerjee. I'm with an industry experience of almost 22 years, and last, I'll say, one decade, living and breathing the payment modernization, and happy to share some insights. And thank you, Vinay, for all the support and the partnership, which we are anyway increasing day by day with Volante in North America region.
Indeed. No, it's a pleasure to be working with you guys. And you mentioned living and breathing payment modernization. I think sometimes for all of us, it feels like also drowning. there is so much going on, right, in PayMod. So, we in our conversations have spent so much time talking about PayMod 3.0, right, and what it is that's the now. But I think it's worth doing maybe just a little bit of historical overview for people, right? Let's start with the beginning, right? What is 1.0, right? Why was it needed? What were some of the challenges? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, so that might take us back to the Stone Age.
Yes.
I hope it is not that far back. It's a very interesting topic, because the reason why we call this, kind of where we are right now, right, is PayMod 3.0. Obviously, that's a reason, right? Because there's a 1.0, 2.0, and that's why we are at 3.0. If you have been following the payment industry, very closely in the past two decades, right, so it's not that far back, you will notice, the initial attempt, right, as an industry trying to fix, some of the urgent issues, right, we have in the industry, is what we call the first generation, the 1.0. And some of the key characteristics that you will notice in 1.0 is, for instance, right, the born of the first generation, quote unquote, payment hub, right? We start using the term payment hub in the industry. You also notice that certain, I call them the specialized payment engine, right? Focusing on maybe cross-border payments, SWIFT, right? Wires, ACH, right? And most of these, system and services are largely legacy technology, and that's kind of quote unquote before Java, right? It's probably some of them are mainframe, HP nonstop. The issue that they are trying to address is mainly focusing on, I would say, the back end integration issues, right? Because, there are just so much, right, that the payment ecosystem need to connect with each other, right? So largely we are trying to address the back end integration, issue. And try to imagine going back to 20 years ago, there's no real-time payment, right? I mean, the customer channels are still very, limited, right? So if you kind of fast forward a little bit to what we call 2.0, this is kind of where we're starting to see distributed technology, in obviously Java, are starting to take hold, right, in the industry, the SOAR architecture, right? Most of our clients are dealing with the increasing number of channels, right, you know, that they have to integrate with, and we're starting to see mobile, right, and API channels is starting to, to come to the picture. And obviously, one of the key topics that as an industry we need to address is real-time payment, right? You know, there are real-time payment needs. We're starting to see more and more payment methods come in the picture. And I think most of the payment practitioners, right, you know, that I know of, are very familiar with these solutions, right? I'm not going to name, you know, the specific providers, but I think that's just the kind of the general themes, right, you know, that we have seen, you know, with 2.0. We do notice that, you know, there are, platform provider, ecosystem providers, right, you know, have been in the market, right, riding that waves, right, in the past almost 10 years. So that really lead to, you know, from Accenture perspective, our definitions of what do you mean by 3.0, right? What is different now? So we look at a couple key characteristics of 3.0, but before we get to that, let's talk about the drivers. What driving the need for 3.0? I think there are two primary drivers. One is our bank client, their own client, we're talking about the corporates, right? Their business model is shifting, right? I think if you pay close attention, right, you know, to the treasury and the payment needs for some of the corporates, right, you're starting to see, a lot of the corporates, their model is shifting, right, direct to consumer. That's a big change, right? Because back in the days, right, if you only need to deal with suppliers and vendors, right, having wires and ACH is more than enough, right? Now when you are facing, consumers, right, you're now talking about credit card payment, wallet, real-time payment, Zelle, right, as an example. So we are seeing, you know, the payment landscape become more and more complex. The other aspect is digital natives, right, because not all of the bank's clients are the traditional corporate anymore. You also have marketplaces, gig economy, and digital natives come into the picture. So bank is constantly not only in the payment space, but also they need to address the needs, the new needs from, you know, from these new clients. The second big driver for us is the increasing demand for data, intelligence, right, and AI. I think the payment data is one of the key areas that we see have very heavily underinvest, right, in the past two decades. And I think a lot of our clients are now kind of waking up. What are we going to do with payment data, right? Given all their clients are asking for insight. So those are the two main driver. And I can go a little bit deeper into what are some of the characteristics of 3.0, but hopefully that makes sense to you, Vinay.
It does. Yeah. No, it absolutely does. there's a lot to unpack there. You know, before I maybe dive into a couple of those things, I know, Bhaskar, you probably have had a point you wanted to make there in terms of some of the background history.
Yeah, I just want to add what Alan has said, like why we are calling it PayMod 1, 2, and 3. There are always the three major, I'll say, participants or factors in this entire payment modernization. One is the banks and FIs, because they need to modernize because of all the legacy systems and all. And as Alan mentioned, talked about, the client needs are also changing. So they need to basically go through, meet all the specific needs of different type of new type of payments and all. Second factor is basically the payment providers also, payment hub providers and all, payment partners and all. They are also evolving. They are also modernizing their platforms and all. And that's why the way of working, the way of modernizing things are also driven by these people and all. And the third, which is major factor, which I see in last 4-5 years, is the regulatory bodies. Because all the regulations in the payment side is also driving this modernization and new way of modernization and all. Because regulatory bodies are coming up very hard on the banks with regard to the deadline for going. So ISO is like a watershed moment in the payments industry, as well as other things and all. So these are the things I just wanted to add, like how these things are driven and changing the way we should modernize things.
No, agreed. That's an important perspective. So I guess if I can summarize, and we'll spend really the rest of the time talking about 3.0, but if I can summarize the context that I understand from you, you know, 1.0 was really, as you said, Alan, probably in this world, really the Stone Age. And the beautiful thing about the Stone Age, or the first technology, is the first technology is always modern, right? Whatever you do, those first electronic payment systems, digital payment systems, you know, you mentioned the mainframes and so on, they were new at that time. But then, you know, they quickly became legacy systems. And that's when the early payment hubs, right, started. Again, you know, much of our audience will know what these applications are. We don't need to name them, but early 2000s and so on. And they were new as well. And they were solving the problem of the earlier systems that had become legacy systems, no longer fit for purpose, you know, couldn't have multiple payment types in one system and so forth. But what we're saying is now is that those early payment hubs have themselves, right, become legacy systems, because many of them were built, in fact, early 2000s, or you could say all of them were built, as you pointed out, Alan, before real-time payments, right, before some of the focus on data. So it's almost like, you know, a complex onion where a large bank, particularly a tier one bank, has these layers, you know, and they probably still have some of the mainframe systems, they may have some of the older payment hubs in place. But what's really needed now, with the huge pressure on real-time data and so forth, is a new approach, right? And that new approach is what we're calling, I guess, PayMod 3.0. Before we go into some of the characteristics of that, and you've already, and I want to pick up on these from each of you, you both mentioned legacy, right? Legacy integration. And that's a problem that seems to keep coming up. So let's talk a little more about that. You know, from a bank's perspective, what is the pressure of legacy integration? Well, why modernize if the legacy systems are doing just fine?
Yeah, I think a lot of the pressure on the bank, I think it come from, you know, just kind of, you know, piggyback on what Bashka mentioned. I mean, obviously you got the regulatory, you know, pressure, right? You know, from the ISO, you know, migration perspective, you know, the deadline is coming, right? You know, I mean, obviously, you know, Fedwire, right? I mean, we're talking about, you know, March next year, most of our clients are busy in making sure that they can meet the, you know, the deadlines. And ultimately, I mean, 2025 is a key year for them. But I think to your point, a lot of the pressure, it come back from, you know, some of the modernization that they have previously done, such as the 1.0. One very interesting observation, we recently did a PayMod survey, and one of the key observations that comes up during our survey is, you know, we are looking at the different types of technical debts that, you know, bank has accumulated over the years. And one of the top technical debts bank has reported it is the amount of application integration services, right? You know, that they have deployed, they have created over the years, which includes some of the first generation payment hub, believe me or not. So now bank is looking at, right, and again, you know, no stranger here, right? For some of the bigger banks that we work with, you can see a lot of overlapping, duplicating application integration, you know, services ranging from the dinosaur EAI, right? You know, to, you know, some of the more advanced, you know, enterprise service bus, right? And even some of the generation one, you know, kind of payment hub solutions. So when you're starting to look at the operating, the run costs, right, for all these integration services over the years, it start really piling up, and businesses and technology have a very hard time to justify, right, continue to pull in more and more money into integration. If you look at the root cause, right, I think the root cause is largely coming from you know, the kind of a lack of a holistic strategy, right, in, you know, in planning integration. So every individual integration, you know, applications, the intention is good. But when you have too many of them and you continue to layer more and more on them, right, that become a problem, right? So I think a lot of our banking clients are facing that pressure now to really clean up the integration landscape and make it more efficient and more cost effective.
Yeah, one of the other episodes, which I recorded recently of Vellante Elevate, was with Dan Pilling, whom you may know. He right now is an independent executive advisor, and he was the CIO of Barclays, right? Big operation. I think he had a couple of thousand people in that operation. And he had a great phrase for all of what you're describing, which was KTLO, keeping the lights on. You know, so much of the budget goes to just keeping the lights on and keeping the factory running, you know, with all these legacy integrations. That certainly resonates, you know, in terms of what we do at Vellante, as you're familiar with. A big piece of our value proposition is around the low-code integration platform that is native to, you know, our payments platform, which enables our customers to really get the most out of the payments platform, because they can get to market quickly, because it's easier when you have a low-code integration layer to integrate to core, to integrate to fraud, to change integrations, to visually change workflow, and so forth. And I think that also is an important part of Paymon 3.0 from a technical perspective, is that in the last 20 years, you know, there have been a lot of advancements just in the technology and development area. It's a lot easier to develop systems now, and we're all trying to take advantage of that. Let's switch from there to one of the key drivers, which both of you have mentioned, I think, is around real-time payments. You know, let's talk about both the pressures that creates on banks and financial institutions, and what the right Paymod 3.0 response is. I'm not sure, Alan, Bhaskar, which of you want to take it, but
you want to go first, Bhaskar?
Have a viewpoint.
Yeah, and this is very close to our heart also, because all these Paymod terminologies which is coming, like how we are working, one of the real factor is the new payment systems and all, or new payment demands from the client side perspective or corporate side perspective and all. And real-time instant payments are the one. And if you go back to understand this, the payment hub culture and all, or payment hub construct, was not meant for the real-time payments and all. Because if you see, payment hub is like a heavy lifting ACH, wires and all, where you have a lot of rules, business rules, and it takes time and those type of things and all. Real-time payments basically challenge all these payment hubs and all, where it requires a lightweight, it requires a very quick, I'll say, time to respond, because it's a real-time and all. And that has actually forced the payment hub providers, like Vellante and fintech providers, to come into that space and change the way the legacy platforms was actually processing and managing these needs of the things and all.
Yeah, I think from a technology perspective, right? I mean, that almost created a perfect storm, right? You know, and if you notice in the market, most of the, you know, the Paymod 3.0 generation, you know, payment providers, right? You know, they are cloud native microservices, right? You know, API driven. And being able to tap into cloud, right, for the infinite scalability. And part of the you know, the real-time proposition is, right, to Bhaskar's point, is fast, right, which means, you know, your processing time is now significantly shrunk, right? It's not T+1, T+2, it's instant. Number two is, you know, the individual payment value obviously is lower, is being kept in many geography, but the volume is much larger. Right. And when you couple that with some of the new economy model, like D2C, kind of more consumer based, right, model, you know, you all of a sudden now talking about, you know, our legacy infrastructure is usually handling 100, you know, transaction per second, and everybody will be happy, will be fine. Now we're talking about 1,000, 10,000. We're talking about 10 times. Right, the volumes that you need to handle. So we're really talking about a very different landscape, right? You know, comparing to what it used to be, right, in the non-real-time payment world.
And would you say, with the organizations that you work with, which, just for reference, primarily work with larger institutions, tier ones, let's say, maybe some of the larger tier twos, 50 billion plus. Is that fair to say? Or do you also work with smaller institutions, you know, at different asset size tiers?
Yeah, we do. And we also work with some of the global bank that they have, you know, subsidiary, right, you know, in the North America market, right? So those are some mm-hmm. of the smaller institutions. But we typically 70% or so of our clients are in the tier one and tier two, and then tier some in the tier three. Yeah.
Okay. So not too different a mix from Vellante, actually, although we maybe have more of a footprint in the tier three space. So appreciating that if every bank is unique, you know, what would you say are, with real-time payments, the biggest challenges that they face in modernizing for real-time? Is it the real-time nature? Is it the volume? Is it the 24/7? You know, that often comes up. Is it maybe something else that we haven't looked at?
Yeah, Bhaskar, you want to take that one?
I think you touched upon all. I think it is a combination of all. So between myself and Alan, and when we talk to the client, we always debate, like, why we are talking about different methodologies to implement. I think real-time payment has actually broken the shackles with the payment hub and all. So it's a real-time. It is like a quick, fast, and also the volume part and all. And it is lightweight. So if you see the monolithic payment hub vendors, they were actually not able to meet that particular demand of the real-time. Mm-hmm. And even, not even the bank, even the partners like yours and fintechs and all, they have to also think through how quickly they can cope up with this real-time things and all. And that was one of the things I always feel that banks also started realizing that they need to start modernizing their platforms and all, how they are particularly managing their payment processing and all.
Right, yeah, particularly after hours, right? Or weekends and off hours processing?
Yes.
Totally agree with Bhaskar, because I think one important point to, you know, to highlight is, you know, this modernization journey is not just about, you know, the payment engine or the payment hub or the payment platform, but also the broader ecosystem. So, you know, while Bhaskar and I have an opportunity to work with one of the top three global banks, right, in supporting them, you know, with their modernization and their RTP journey, right? One of their biggest concern is, I mean, even though I have a payment engine, right, that I can trust to process the volumes and connect it to all these new rails, our number one concern is, frankly, is sanction, right? You know, could our sanction system, right, sustain that kind of a, you know, 10 time, right, 100 times volumes, right, in some of these, you know, jurisdictions. So the bank have invested significantly, right, in, you know, in upgrading, you know, the rest of the ecosystem to make sure your sanction, your fraud, right? And again, real time, I mean, fraud is also a very important, you know, domain that they need to modernize. So I think we are starting to see the effect of real time payment not only impacting you know, the payment you know, the payment platform provider, but also some of these ancillary systems that are in the ecosystem. We are seeing that uptake, that growth, and as well.
And absolutely, that's a good segue, actually, to another important topic. You both mentioned it from different angles. You know, you, Alan, you talked about data being a really big part of the PayMod 3.0 approach, doing more useful things with data than were done in the past. And Bhaskar, you mentioned the regulatory side of things, right? And real-time payments run in ISO 20022. Almost all the modern real-time payment systems run in ISO 20022. I'm not sure that that's necessarily being taken advantage of well as yet, right? In terms of how the data is being used. But there's no question that ISO 20022 does have the promise, you know, with the data, of transforming not just the technology of payments processing, of payments infrastructure, but also the customer experience, right? Of the customer's customer, meaning the bank's customers, whether they be consumers or businesses. So let's spend a little time on that big topic of data and how it could be transformative.
Yeah, I mean, Bashkat is breathing and living ISO 222 for the past 3 years, so I'll let him speak to
Sure.
that.
And this is a very good topic because Vinay, your team is working very closely with us for one of the biggest North America bank. As we speak, we have like touched upon close to 70 plus countries with regard to ISO adoption for that particular bank. ISO, I'll say, is like we talked about the new payment products was driving these changes. ISO, I'll say, is like a watershed moment for the payment industry because it has impacted not only only the product side, but it has impacted the entire payment ecosystem for the banks and all. It's like it's a nerve system which has been changed, and that has triggered this payment modernization much, much faster than any other thing and all. So bank has been forced to look into their entire payment ecosystem when they are actually adopting to ISO, because it's not about only translation. This ISO is basically changing the way the payment industry used to interact between the financial institutions, corporates, as well as your end clients and all. So I'll say it's one of the biggest factor, and which is not only any specific region, but it is impacting globally. So it is not only about SWIFT or CBPR ISO conversion. Now, most of the local FMIs are also changing to the ISO standards and all. And that is forcing most of the banks to think about how they can, when they have already embarked into this ISO adoption journey, why can't they also parallelly think about how they can modernize things? And this is not happening with one bank. We have seen that globally, yes, maybe they have started the program of ISO more like a tactical perspective of only thinking about translation, but slowly, slowly they are going beyond. And we, in fact, we define the project like a basic compliance and then the beyond compliance, which is all related to your point on data, because right now most of the banks are only adhering to the basic compliance perspective. The importance of data, which is coming as part of the ISO, which is enhanced data, I think some of the banks who are a little bit ahead of the curve, they started thinking about it.
Yeah, the thing with data and compliance, as you said, is that it has to be multi-stage, right? And you know, one way to look at this is it is truly transformational, like AI, which we'll talk about in a moment, or maybe it's more like Y2K, right? Which was some of us remembered, you know, a huge project, a global project, but essentially a project to kind of end up in the same place. Right, meaning that it didn't really create any new capabilities, but there was a lot of new technology installed, so that they could handle four-digit dates instead of two. So, you know, let me give you an analogy and see if this resonates. That the compliance effort is sort of more like Y2K, where in the end, even with the new messages, the banks and customers will be doing and seeing the same thing. But the real opportunity in customer experience is that beyond compliance stuff. And that is still maybe in the works, right? That's still early. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, I might have a little bit different metaphor here.
Okay, let's hear it.
I feel like when our regulator is breathing down our neck, right, and pushing us to ISO, is like, your doctor is telling you have been eating too much, you have to go on a diet,
I know
right?
about that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's for your good health, right? But in order to for you to really, to be able to benefit from, right, from this is, I think ultimately bank and also more important, the bank customer, the behavior need to change. So we actually conducted a roundtable with your team when and a number of bank executives last weekend in Chicago. We have a very interesting discussion and dialogue with everyone about ISO 2022. I think, if you kind of put it really down to, a real practical examples, right? And I use this example, to illustrate the effect of ISO 2022 and how, this could truly deliver business benefit to your customers. Every day, there are millions and millions, I mean, even take Accenture as an example. We receive payments, right? We are cutting invoices, we are receiving payments, millions and millions a day, right? There's always this extremely cumbersome process to reconcile incoming payment with, our invoices, right?
Yes.
So that reconciliation can be extremely, extremely, easier if the customers remember to put the invoice number, right, in the memo field or whatever. So, so if you're sending in a payment to us without any of the references, such as the invoice number, there's no way we can reconcile it. And we'll have to spend a lot of time and energy to research, to apply that cash, right, to the invoice so that, we can close out the entry. So from an ISO perspective, right, ISO provide you that, amazing structure, right? And to some extent, make it in some cases mandatory, right? For the client to inclusion in information that indirectly is trying to force the client changing their behavior, right? So now you can see the relations, right? I mean, a bank is the middleman, right? Ultimately, the client need to change their behaviors to take advantage of that extra field, right, in ISO, and remember to include the invoice number, right? Then the downstream processing could be a lot more efficient. So I really like some of the speakers, during the roundtable last week, they brought up that the key point is we have to drag the customers along during this ISO transformation journey, not to tell them that, hey, we finished the transformation, but here's the impact to you, right? They need to be part of the journey from the beginning. And that's where you're going to see the most benefit.
Yes. I think from an ISO perspective, Vinay, just 1 minute.
Go ahead, please.
From an ISO perspective, right now, the banks are only complying to ISO. I think the next wave is going to come where corporate will start adopting the ISO formats also for sending the payment files and all. And that will be the real benefit you can drive end-to-end with regard to data. And only keeping the data, saving in your database doesn't going to help to the bank. Bank need to make or utilize those data to make good insights using AI or whatever it is to send it back to their corporates or utilize it for their own purpose or monetizing it and all. So that will be, like Alan mentioned, it will be like a beyond compliance where most of the heads of the industry will start moving once the November 2025 date goes away.
The compliance is really just to lay the foundation, right?
Yes.
For a good reason that, we're going to ask you to keep cutting down your carb, right? For a good reason. The doctor didn't say that, right? Just to kind of play with you, right? There's a good reason to do that. You might not be able to see that immediate benefit, right? But if you change some of the behavior, let's say you exercise, right? Then you will be able to take advantage of the diet. That's okay. How we kind of see the two correlated.
Agree.
And the promise, I think, of all of this is that if we combine some of these newer capabilities of PayMod 3.0. Let's take ISO, we were just talking about ISO, combined with real-time payments, or really combined with it, then we have the prospect that fundamental issues, like you mentioned reconciliation, which is time-consuming, error-prone, expensive, et cetera, the data can solve, the data problem or the analysis problem, and the real-time can solve the timing problem so that in effect, you can have real-time reconciliation, or reconciliation almost goes away, right? Because you can have the data automatically reconciled, perhaps with the intermediary of AI, right? Actually looking at the data, looking at incoming, looking at outgoing, matching them up, and doing them in ways that we probably are only starting to dream about today. Speaking of today, we do only have a few minutes left, unfortunately, in our time. I want to come back to AI. Maybe that's a different episode session. We will have you guys back on. But I think it would be remiss not to spend a few minutes, if we're talking about PayMod 3.0, on the important topic of cloud and payments as a service, right? And we've discussed this many times between us with our customers as well. Vellante's position on this is fairly clear in terms of what we see in the market, which is that there's a massive movement, certainly to cloud, often as private cloud, but also more broadly, payments as a service, where even larger banks, tier one institutions, are taking portions of their payment infrastructure and essentially outsourcing them, right, to organizations like ourselves, where we run their payments operation, the technically, as a service. So talk to us about that, right? How does that fit into your notion of PayMod 3.0?
Yeah, I think, you know, historically, banks are fairly resistant to outsource, you know, their payment processing, their payment infrastructure, right? Because of, they kind of look at that as this is the crown jewel, right? Applications of the bank. But I think the factors, right, you know, kind of driving a lot of these, the payment as a service is a viable option is number one, right? Payment processing itself, right, it's not a competitive advantage. It's not rocket science, right? And it's getting more and more commoditized. So it's just really about how to divide your investment money into what you should be really focusing on, such as new product creation, value add services, right? You know, modernizing your customer experience. That is far better for the bank to invest, right? Versus pay, you know, processing a fat wire, right? Which there's only one way, right? You know, to unpack an Archer file or process fat wires. Why right. A bank, you know, would be putting your strategic investments right into that. I think the other factor is this is actually not, I mean, it is a relatively newer concept, right, for us in core payment world. But if you look at, for example, like card processing, right? I mean, that as a service and outsource model has been there for a long time, right? I mean, there are providers out there are already doing, you know, and providing as a service, right? You know, for some of these really large, you know, credit card portfolios. So I think as an industry, right, we always advise the client, right? You have limited time and budget and energy, frankly, right, to invest in your payment ecosystem. Where you want to fight the battle? Do you want to, you know, to focus more on your customers, right? Your customer experience, your product, right? And value add services, or you're trying to figure out how to, you know, how to process an ISO 20022 payments. It's really up to the bank.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. This has been a wide-ranging discussion on a number of different topics, each of which, you know, could have taken half an hour at least. I would like to leave the audience with one final thought from each of you, you know, if you can. And it's a simple question, right? If you were talking to a CIO, chief product officer, a senior executive at a bank today, who is embarking on or trying to build a business case for payments modernization or is embarking on a payments modernization program, what advice would you give them to get it right? You know, make sure to avoid the mistakes maybe that other organizations have made.
Okay. I'll keep it short, this one. I'll say that use payment platform providers for their basic core payment processing part. So we call it as a buy the commodity and build the differentiator so that the banks have the control in terms of all their business rule customization and all. Don't customize the platform. Customize the services so that you can change it according to the needs of your clients and all. That's all.
Yeah, my only advice is PayMod 3.0 is, I mean, by our calculation, we are already in PayMod 3.0 probably in a year or 2 years already. So we are still at the curves of the beginning. But it will very soon at your doorsteps. So my advice to bank executive is the timing. You cannot ignore it. You cannot delay it anymore, right? And you don't want to turn this from an opportunity and become a necessity to survive in the business, right? I hate to use the hurricane metaphor because there's one coming. But yeah. you have the chance to evacuate now. Right. But there's a very small win opportunity. Once you miss it, you're on your own.
Yeah.
And the alternative, of course, is to build the right infrastructure, right, to withstand whatever nature throws at us. So we will close on that point. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Alan Ng, Managing Director of Payments, and Bhaskar Banerjee, Principal Director of Payments, both of Accenture. We have been talking about payments modernization 3.0. Thank you both.
Thanks
for having us.
Hope you enjoyed that episode of Vellante Elevate, where we explore what the world of payments will look like tomorrow by talking to the experts who are building it today. Subscribe to Vellante Elevate on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Podbean, or visit us on www.vellantetech.com/elevate.